8:03, Sharif Jewelers wants to tell you happy holidays. You tell them happy holidays by going to sharifjewelers.com. Kings and Celtics pregame 3:30 tip right here on KHDK. I want to remind you, before we get to Sam Amick in about 5 minutes, KHDK will be at the grand opening of Century Arden 14 today, noon to 1, 1590 Ethan Way at How About Arden. Stop by the KHDK tent to win free concessions. They got luxury lounges, brand new auditorium there. I grew up going there, and the Cynodome's right down there on Greenback and Garfield, so I cannot wait to check out that new theater. Go to khdk.com for details. Dave, Katie, and Nate. Katie in Boston ahead of that game tonight. I want to, real quick, before we get to Sam, there's a story that came out yesterday, and it's still developing right now. If you're not familiar with who Joe McKnight is, or I should say was at this point, Joe McKnight played at USC, and as Tyrann Mathieu said yesterday, he said everybody wanted to be Reggie Bush, but people that were from New Orleans, they wanted to run the ball like Joe McKnight. He played a few years in the NFL for the Jets, amongst others, had some issues off the field, and was playing in the Canadian Football League most recently. He was shot and killed yesterday by a gentleman named Ronald Gasser, and that was, I believe that was in New Orleans, about 3 p.m. Yesterday, noon our time. According to witnesses, the man, Gasser, who shot McKnight more than once, the witness said, he said, quote, "I told you, don't F with me," and then he fired another shot while McKnight was on the ground. Now, again, that's unconfirmed, but that's a witness report. McKnight did not have a gun, according to the sheriff's department. They did not find a gun outside of McKnight's vehicle. That's a story in and of itself. But what is developing now is the man who shot him was apparently released from custody overnight without being charged. And that investigation still continues. So that's something. And I really, I mean, I don't know what we're going to analyze there. That's just news I'm throwing out there that happened, whether it's a former football player or not. That's an extremely troubling story. But the fact that that bleeds a little bit into the sports world is something I felt necessary to at least share. Just a tragedy all the way around. Apparently, they're calling it a road rage situation. So we'll continue to monitor that, as I'm sure the rest of the sports world and the world in general will, as that story develops. Segueing out of, again, an unsegueable topic, Sam Amick will join us here in a few seconds. And a lot to talk about. Now, not only we're all paying attention to the fact that Houston beat Golden State in double overtime last night in Oakland, but we're not focusing on the fact that the Cleveland Cavaliers have now lost two in a row, and the Clippers, who everybody thought, and rightfully so, were kind of slipping after that hot start. They didn't just beat them, they throttled them 113-94. Joining us right now from USA Today, but really always from Sacramento in our hearts and mind, it's the one, the only Sam Amick. And Samuel, brought to you by Stockton Honda. Stockton Honda, Northern California's fastest growing Honda dealer. Get your 15-minute trade-in appraisal at Stockton Honda.com. It helps pay for all those wonderful corduroy jackets that Sam wears. How are you, buddy?
I'm good, man. I didn't make good on my promise a couple weeks ago. I still haven't rocked the corduroy this season.
Come on,
I'll get there.
Come on,
bro.
Make it happen. What what do you pull more out of? You pull more out of Houston beating the Warriors last night or the Clippers and the Cavaliers? Which one kind of perked your ears up the most?
Well, I want to go back and watch Clippers Cavs, admittedly, because I was at Warriors Rockets. I didn't get to actually see much. But as far as the bigger deal, I think Clippers beating the Cavs, and that was in Cleveland, correct?
Yes, it was, by 19.
Yeah, I mean, that's big time. And from what I heard, it was beginning to end. And like you said, Dave, they had lost three in a row. They hadn't looked as good, and this is after a fantastic start. The Warriors Rockets thing, for one, it was a lot of fun, which was cool because you're talking about, I'm forgetting what date it is. Are we early or late November, early December at this point, but it's early regular season when the whole narrative going into the year, because Durant signed with Golden State, was that the regular season was going to be boring. It wasn't going to matter. The Warriors were going to just coast right through it. And they've been good, but there's been some great storylines. And so the Rockets being able to come into the building and kind of send this message that not only are they, you know, a high scoring team and a fun team, but maybe more legitimate than we thought, was interesting. But the Warriors have won 12 in a row, man. You know what I mean? Like, it's going to come to an end. They don't even really want to have these 28 game winning streaks like they did last year. I know that sounds funny, but the hype gets so big that they're trying to avoid that. So the Clippers beating the Cavs, I think, is the bigger deal.
Well, and Sam,
Katie,
you know,
your mic's not up, dear. All right, there we go.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, it is? Do we have Katie? Yeah. There we go. Yeah. That's our fault. Go ahead, Katie.
Sam, to me, when you look at a team like Houston, who I have the utmost respect for Mike D'Antoni and the way that he kind of runs a team and the style that they play, but the big asterisk on him is just playoff wins and how much – can we put on a win over, you know, OKC at home when really it's going to come down to a 7-game series and playing a little defense and being able to stop a team? I feel like you can shock a team in a single game, you know, here and there throughout the season.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I mean, but for right now, considering for one, this is a really new team, and James Harden talked about this afterwards, and he kind of admitted that, and Katie, you know from playing that, like, if you have a new group of human beings playing together, then confidence is something that either grows or shrinks, right? So right now, he kind of admitted that last night was one of those games that sends a message to themselves that they can be pretty good, especially, let's not forget the context. I think they had lost, like, 8 straight regular season games to the Warriors. They faced them in the playoffs and got knocked out in 5 games by then the last 2 years. It's a pretty good ownage of the Warriors on Houston. And so to break that streak is big. Bigger picture, certainly there's still a lot of questions about the Rockets. D'Antoni, who I'm with you on him, I have a ton of respect for Mike, and honestly, shameless plug for our podcast. I sat down with him yesterday. We're going to run that interview next week, and he was really good talking about what they're trying to do offensively. But the defense is the question. And he went into the year telling people that he wanted to be top 10 in points allowed per 100 possessions. And honestly, I think right now they're like 29th. So that's a problem. And Eric Gordon was added in the summer. Eric's not known as a good defender. Ryan Anderson, not known as a good defender. Yeah, so I don't know how they fix that problem. But I think they're going to be a playoff team. And they're trying to be a middle-of-the-pack kind of 4 or 5 seed playoff team in the West.
Sam Amick of USA Today with us on the drive. Sam, I'm not going to try to pretend that the Warriors aren't capable of winning 70 games, but when you look at a game like last night, Draymond Green having a little bit of a meltdown that cost them some momentum, and, you know, he almost literally cost them the finals last year because he's kind of got a screw loose a little bit. Our team's starting to try to get under his skin and maybe see, you know what, let's take our chances, try to get his head out of it and see if we can't beat this team.
I don't know if they're doing that. I mean, he does it to himself most of the time. That one, it's funny because I like Draymond a lot. And I almost, and last night afterwards, after the game, a couple of writers and I had grabbed a quick bite to eat in Oakland and actually ran into Draymond. But there was all these fans grabbing him, and I was kind of laughing because I didn't get a chance to say hello. And I almost wanted to be, you know, and I don't normally do this, but have that, like, just kind of a chat, like, yo, like, what are you doing? Like, this leg thing, man, like stop, because it's just, it's unnecessary. And then I also, as much as I like the guy, I don't understand, you know, he keeps fighting this fight where in the press conference he did act like the victim, and I think he's got to stop at that, because the leg, I mean, last year I didn't love it in the finals because LeBron goaded him, and you know, leading up to, and that's not the leg thing, that was the crotch shot, but this one's different. Like, your leg literally went like 7 feet in the air. I can't believe the guy's the most flexible player in the NBA, for one. And that's not a good thing for him. And it's unfortunate because, if you remember, he was single-handedly keeping the Warriors in that game in double overtime. I mean, he was amazing. You had Steph fouling out. You had other guys in foul trouble. Draymond was fantastic. Nate, to the question of kind of them beating themselves, I think last night is mostly an aberration. You know what I mean? Like, Steph and the foul trouble, and then the lesson that they had to learn the hard way, that it was pretty ugly without Steph on the floor. I think they didn't really know how to play with Kevin as part of this team now. They put too much on him, and it, as Draymond said, it became the Kevin Durant show, and that's just not their style of basketball.
Sam Amick joining us. Sam, want to play you something. LeBron James said, I believe it was yesterday, he won the SI Sportsman of the Year, was asked about a rematch with the Warriors in the finals. Iman Shumpert said recently that he was obsessed, basically, with playing the Warriors in the finals, and this is something Draymond Green kind of started saying the same thing. Do you buy LeBron James is not thinking about that at all?
I mean, do I think the thought has crossed his mind that they could face off again? Be the first time in NBA history that's happened three times in a row. No, he's certainly thought about it, but he's taken the right road here. He's got to be this way. And honestly, you know, I kind of applaud him for taking that route, because you do have an NBA today that has got a lot of parity. We're seeing, you know, we're talking about these teams. We're talking about how the Clippers just gave the Cavs a little bit of humble pie. And if LeBron were to come out and say anything close to, yeah, I think that's who it's going to be, and I'm looking forward to it, I can't wait to kill those guys again, I mean, he would get destroyed. So, I mean, of course he's thought about the fact that it's a very real possibility, but there are more than enough uncertainties in play this season that he's not, it's not really a platitude either. It's not a cliche. I mean, he's right that, A, they can't take for granted that they're going to get there, although, you know, the Raptors are the closest thing to a challenger. And right now there's a major gap in my mind, even with the Clippers loss, between the Cleveland and the rest of the Eastern Conference field. But in the West, a lot of good teams, they don't know who they're going to face. You know, and you know, it'll unfold and then we'll see if it happens.
Sam, I want to talk to you a little bit and switch gears and go towards the Boston Celtics. Obviously the Kings taking them on tonight. This is a team that I think is going to make a lot of noise in the East this year. I'm still trying to figure out. I feel Al Horford is going to be the difference maker. Obviously, we haven't seen a whole lot of him this season. What's your take on the Celtics team?
I like them, but they're just not taking the jump that everybody thought they were going to. The Horford situation, obviously, a big factor. You know, I love that pickup when they added him. You know, but you're kind of seeing, I mean, the injury was huge, but even with him at full health, you know, he's not adding a ton to them as far as hitting the glass and you know, he's a very good defender, but I don't know. I'm still waiting to see how that fit is. And I also, this has got a Sacramento tilt to it. You know, I think it's really interesting to kind of see the latest iteration of Isaiah Thomas and what his ceiling might be. Now, Isaiah has made a living and made a life off of people putting his ceiling lower than he puts it, and then, you know, he just burst right through it. But you became an all-star. I believe he's second in the East in scoring right now. Mm-hmm. Had another good year. But to make these guys elite as a team is going to be tough. And, you know, they've leaned really heavily on him offensively for a long, long time now, and it's been fun to watch. I think they, with Al and some of those other pieces, it's got to become more balanced over time, because there is a ceiling collectively on playing that way offensively. You know, it's fun to watch a mini might dominate, but eventually, especially with defenses adjusting, that's gonna have a shorter shelf life. So, you know, good team. Brad Stevens, widely considered not even an up and coming coach anymore, one of the best in the game, and he's fun to watch grow as a coach. But a lot of good things going on, but they're trying to take that next step.
Sam, on a game-to-game basis, what kind of weaknesses do the Celtics have that the Kings might be able to exploit?
Truthfully, Nate, I don't want to be fake with that. I haven't watched a ton of them this year. I feel like, you know, again, if I'm guarding the Celtics, you almost want to play that game with Isaiah, where, you know, you never want to let a guy go or let a guy get hot. But if it becomes too imbalanced, you know, that's just easier to guard than Isaiah getting guys involved and having guys coming at you left and right. So that's probably the one thing that does jump out on me, because, you know, he's a great player. But, you know, if you can focus on one guy and have him try to put too much on his shoulders, you know, I think that's a guardable situation.
Last thing for you, Sam Amick of USA Today. We were talking earlier about the Celtics, despite getting Al Horford, still maybe being the one team in the NBA that, if Danny Ainge got a hair up as you know where and wanted DeMarcus Cousins on his team tomorrow, had the package and ability to pry him away from Vlade Divac and the Kings. Do you agree with that, or do you think that ship, if it hasn't sailed, has at least moved off of the whatever that thingy is support, that a ship is maybe? Tied. Yeah, that thing.
Yeah. I feel like, you know, that's a conversation that they're not going to not have the conversation. But I have had some conversations in the somewhat recent past with folks on the Boston side. And the part that I found so interesting and that I have had the chance to ask, you know, I guess in our business, you'd say people with knowledge of the Celtics thinking,
ooh,
is that, you know, guys, you know, we have some history here where you saw Isaiah Thomas playing with DeMarcus, and does that not jump? I mean, in this age of analytics and trying to grab any piece of data that you can to help give you a competitive edge, is that not a relevant fact that if those were two of your top players, that for whatever reason, when those two guys were together, it's not like they were gangbusters. They never won more than, you know, it was the high 20s. They never even got to 30 wins together. If I was Danny Ainge, that's what would concern me. But it sure would be tempting to make that kind of a move. Now, do I see it happening? Probably not. You know, because it, at one point in time, it was kind of an Avery Bradley situation where, you know, you give the Kings more defense on the perimeter, give them a wing, put some other pieces in there. You know, I don't necessarily see it happening. The only little, you know, the only reason I think, who knows, maybe it could, is that if the Kings were going to make that trade, I've always contended that you'd want to ship them as far away from Sacramento as possible. And to see him in Boston would probably be easier than seeing him in a Lakers uniform or anywhere, you know, anywhere else out west.
Stockton Honda, Northern California's fastest growing Honda dealer. Get your 15-minute trade-in appraisal at StocktonHonda.com, and they bring Sam Amick to us each and every week. Thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you soon.
You got it, boys. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Sam.
All right.
Yep. Thanks.
Take care. That is Sam Amick. We still have a little bit left in this segment, which is
Katie a boy.
Just enough time.
What? He said boys. Katie.
And Katie.
Sorry, I was talking over him.
Charles Barkley got loose a little bit yesterday.
Did he really?
And the topic of his discussion was the Golden State Warriors. Would you like to hear what Charles said about Golden State?
Oh, yes, please.
All right, here you go.
This is good. Katie's going to love this.
You know, they always tell us, the consultants say, that when you talk over each other, the listeners hate it. But Inside the NBA is the top-rated studio show, and my goodness, do they talk over each other all the time. In between all of that, you basically heard Charles Barkley saying, the Golden State Warriors play girly basketball. He doesn't, you know, he doesn't have anything against. How did he say it again? Let's see.
I
love women's college basketball, but I don't want it in the NBA. I feel,
what part of it is is women's basketball? What point is he trying to make? I don't know.
Layups.
I guess. Okay. Aside from this, you know, just being like a kind of a horrifyingly bad opinion as it is. People that say stuff like this, do they not watch the Warriors when they get to the playoffs? Do they not watch the way they play defense and the level of physicality? Like, that's what gets me about these old guys. Oh, man, you can't even play physical anymore. Why? Because Vernon Maxwell can't get 9 technical fouls in one round of the 1994 playoffs. Like, he did that in 17 games. 17 games, he had 9 technical fouls in the playoffs. So you can't do that anymore. But you can't tell me watching those games that that's not physical basketball, that they're not D'ing up, that they're not knocking each other around. They turn into every great playoff team when the playoffs come around. They're going to beat you up. They're going to protect the rim.
Yeah.
And just because they shoot jump shots and make them doesn't change that.
I think the usage of the three-point shot is maybe where Charles is trying to, you know, make the correlation.
Right.
But that's just, you have to consider the source. And I'm not saying consider the source in terms of it being Chuck. I'm saying consider the source as it being a former player who played a couple decades ago. Basketball has changed so much. The three-point shot and the usage in basketball has changed so much. Women have always been great shooters. That's just, they're more fundamental. It's been more of a finesse game and less of a power game, but that as well has changed. So this is just an all around bad take by Chuck. And you know what? Good friend. I can't hate him for it, but I'm just like, you know, I kind of shake my head and I was like, well, you know, are you shocked that he's got a bad take? No, it happens all the time with him.
It's weird the way Charles Barkley is perceived by the public, and the fact that the dude has had so many takes over the years that would drive
some
a lot of
them
people.
Are even good.
Many of them are good, but some of them would drive a lot of people out of a career. Much less be a bad take. And Charles is kind of like, Charles Barkley is like the NBA media version of your grandpa who's lost control of his fart controller when he walks, and he just kind of walks up and down, lets them go whenever, pretends not to hear them, and then says a bunch of weird, inflammatory, and borderline racist stuff at dinner, and you just go, "That's Grandpa." Oh,
man, I had such a good one at Thanksgiving.
I mean, I'm hoping we're not referring to borderline racist takes, right? That's something else. When you said you had a good one at Thanksgiving,
I didn't have the good one.
Right? It's just we excuse, and honestly, I'd rather live in this world than the alternative, but. Charles gets a pass like the resident old grandpa that you just write it off and say that's Charles. So
grabbing waitresses' asses, yes, and stuff like that. And
literally,
like,
probably.
What are you doing?
Yes. So are we?
And they like it.
What is girly? Now listen, I'm on record saying that I am not a huge fan for the. I have a hard time watching extended runs of women's college basketball and women's basketball in general. And that has nothing to do with the fact that I don't like women. I don't like the general style. I enjoy dunks and all that garbage. I'm a moron. That's fine. I wear it. But what the hell is girly basketball? What is he taught? Fundamentals? Layups? I don't.
You can't just say something like that. And, I mean, even if it, I mean, frankly, does it even matter what he means by it?
Because, I guess not.
I mean, because really, basketball is basketball. And just because you don't like the style that a team's playing, like there's, I don't know, there's a million other ways that you can say you don't like that style without, because you know what Charles was, I wasn't trying to offend women or anything. But you know what I mean? Like, you know,
oops,
that he's gonna, right. You know that he would say something like that. And that's. So find another way to describe it. We get it. You don't like the Warriors.
Oh, real quick, let's go to Ken. Ken, you're on the drive. We got a break here in a second. Wanted to fit you in.
It's just frustrating that Charles Barkley receives so much attention for the stupid comments that he makes. And it's just unfortunate that somebody is willing to pay him millions of dollars a year to make the kind of statements that basically cause people to talk from day to day. The thing that frustrates me more than anything about guys that played basketball in the 80s is they act like people weren't around, or people who were around to watch them play then aren't around today. When they make these stupid statements, they act like we don't remember how horrible the basketball was in the 80s or something. They were basically mugging people on the court. It was so bad that Davis said the edict against fighting in the NBA where you can't leave the bench, that had to be. They were having gang fights. So this idea that it was so much better because it was physical is only romanticized in their eyes. Basketball fans hated that stuff. They hated the style of the Pistons and the Knicks, and they loved what Jordan and the Bulls finally came around because it was basketball again. But Barkley to be saying that this was basketball that the true fan loves is nonsense, and people who weren't around in the 80s are too young to remember what was going on. Please don't believe that garbage. Basketball today is so much better than it was in the 80s. It's not even comparable.
Well done, Ken. Thank you.
Couldn't have
you.
Said it better, Ken. Thanks.
Always drops the mic.
Absolutely. Yep. We'll take a break. Switching gears back to football. Andy Benoit of MMQB will join us. We will talk to him about, oh, gee golly, so much when it comes to the world of the NFL, including the Oakland Raiders and where they stand now in the AFC with Rob Gronkowski out. Don't go away. Ken Rudolph following him right here on The Drive, Sports 1140 KHDK. 836, Sharif Jewelers wants to let you know, hey, happy holidays. Go to sharifjewelers.com and check them out. Andy Benoit of MMMQB joining us in just seconds. Just some fallout from the segment we finished on Charles Barkley and Ken calling in. Ken, one of the better callers, if not the best around, and somebody texted in. They disagree with Ken. The Lakers-Celtics playoff series were incredible. I tend to agree with that. It's not a black or white situation, but I think overall Ken's point stands. And then another.
Yeah, there's definitely gray areas, yeah, for sure.
Another texter says, Ken is hands down the best caller in Sacramento. He should
Agreed.
Have his own radio show. And I will just tell you this, and I don't mean to offend anybody, but people that had success calling radio never, ever make
work.
Good radio hosts.
Hey, you want to know something about Ken, Katie, is that he's a Weed High School graduate.
Hey.
Is he really?
He is.
You know what? I remember from one of his calls before him talking about that. Absolutely.
Speaking of people from small towns that had success, from tiny little boys. Boise, Idaho, Andy Benoit has found his way to success. He describes himself as a film nerd for MMMQB, and I completely agree with that, and I love him for it. You can follow him on Twitter, Andy_Benoit. Andy, it's Dave, Katie, and Nate. Thanks for joining us. How are you?
I'm well. How are you guys all?
Oh, you Great. Know, it's Friday, Andy. I mean, come on. We're almost done here, and then it's football time. One thing I love about you above all is you just go so deep beyond all the hyperbole that's out there, and you put out stuff by watching film that's just undeniable facts. So I will start with the story really of the day. Rob Gronkowski out most likely the entire season for the Patriots. In your mind, what does this do to the Patriots' chances to come out of the AFC?
Well, anytime you remove a player of that caliber, and I think we all agree that Gronkowski is whatever the highest shelf of superstar can be, that's the one he's on. Anytime you eliminate that guy, that's going to have an impact, certainly. But what I look at when there are injuries, every team has injuries, and the case 99 times out of 100 is the guy who replaces the injured guy. That guy is not going to be as talented. That's why he was the backup, and that's why he's now replacing him. So every team's going to have to deal with that. What you then shift to is, okay, the less talented guy's in there, but do they have to change their style and approach to the game because of that? And in New England's case, I think the answer there is no. Martellus Bennett can still do, stylistically, he can do a lot of what Gronkowski did. They were wanting to become a two tight end offense with Bennett and Gronkowski. That never really fully came to fruition anyway this year because of injuries to Gronkowski earlier. So they become a very good three wide receiver offense. And now Bennett becomes the guy at tight end in the three receiver offense. The other thing that you have to factor in is Deion Lewis came back a few weeks ago, their running back. He's not a Gronkowski-type weapon, of course, but he is a mismatch maker, and you can align him in a variety of spots in the formation, pretty much anywhere except tight end, in fact. Slot receiver, wide receiver, running back, offset back. And when you do that with a movable running back like that, you force the defense to reveal their coverage oftentimes before the snap by how they match up to them. So New England still gets that mismatch-making element. They have a dynamic element to their offense again. It's not as dominant of a player, but stylistically they can do all the things they've been doing all season long still.
Andy, looking at the Raiders, obviously being the home of the Raiders, they're 9-2 right now, 5-game win streak for them. I think one of the most impressive things about this team has been their ability to come from behind in fourth quarters. When you look at game film of this team, what do you see in the fourth quarter with Derek Carr and the rest of that offense that enables them to do that?
Well, Carr can, as they say, make all the throws. There's no question about that. He's a tremendous talent. And when you have a quarterback that can do that, the other team that's had a lot of fourth quarter comebacks this year and over the years is Detroit. And the commonality there is Matthew Stafford's a guy that can make all the throws. And in the fourth quarter of games, there are times where you need to make throws that you would normally not make. You have to press the issue a little bit. And that's where arm talent really rises up. People, it's become chic to say arm talent's overrated, the NFL arm strength's overrated. It's not. It matters. Accuracy certainly matters, and so does arm strength, and so does your throwing motion. And Stafford, Carr, guys like that that have that quick, tight, snappy release, they have an advantage in those kind of moments. So the other thing Oakland does very well is, and it's not necessarily purely a fourth quarter thing, but it can show up, and it has shown up in the fourth quarter, especially against zone defenses. They identify your most prominent zones, and they put in special formations that exploit those and get the matchups that they want. The best example actually came in the fourth quarter against Carolina last week, the big throw down the middle to Michael Crabtree. They got him matched up on linebacker A.J. Klein, and that's because they understood at that part of the field and in that moment of the game, Carolina is going to play Tampa 2 coverage there, and they knew if we put Crabtree in the inside slot and run him deep, the only guy who can cover him in Tampa 2 would be the linebacker. So they've done a tremendous job with that each game this year. They do it about 2 or 3 times a game. That's how they get their big shot plays in. And that was a huge one. That's a great illustration of what this Raiders offense has been about.
Andy Benoit of MMQB.com with us on KHDK. Andy, behind your guys like Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers, there's kind of this subsect of other star quarterbacks that are like A-minus, B-plus guys that are prolific, like Matt Stafford, Matt Ryan, guys like that. Derek Carr right now is putting up huge numbers, and I'm wondering, do you see him closer to being in that Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady class, or is he kind of that B-plus type of guy that can put up a ton of good numbers but really needs help around him to be on a winner?
Well, that's an interesting question because it's a variety of all those. He's not a guy that necessarily needs help around him. Talent-wise, he can be in that Brady, Rodgers type of class. Watching him on film this season, and the reason I think, to be frank, I don't think he's anywhere near the MVP. He'll be in the discussion because they have the best record. He has nice numbers, and that's how voters think about things. But he has not played anywhere near an MVP level when you watch him on film. He still will leave a few throws on the field. There are times where he doesn't play on time mentally. He'll get off of good reads too early before they materialize, or he'll stay on bad ones too long. These are not egregious things, but they're elements, they're hiccups in his quarterbacking that show up not every week, but they've shown up more weeks than not. And that's the kind of stuff that you don't see from Brady, Breeze, Rivers, Roethlisberger, these really good, polished, veteran superstar quarterbacks. So he can, and that can be learned with experience, and I think it will be, but that's where he's at right now. And I hope they're coaching him hard there in Oakland and really holding him accountable, because he's a very talented player, and he can be in the discussion we're having about him.
Andy Benoit, MMQB. God, I want to throw three M's in there. Joining us back on November 2nd, you wrote, a very interesting article. And the lead was really, Derek Carr isn't as good as you think. And that caught my attention and got my ire up a little bit, because I think he's phenomenal. And this is what's great about what you do, is you explain yourself through film and through screenshots. And I want to point out one in particular. It was the game versus Jacksonville. To your point about how Derek Carr will stay on bad reads sometimes, they designed a fake slot swing pass to attack Jalen Ramsey, the rookie out of Florida State, hoping he'd abandon that outside vertical coverage, which is exactly what happened. But before Amari Cooper, who you also call maybe the most patient route runner in the game already, had a chance to lure Jalen to sleep, Derek Carr was focused on Latavius Murray, the check down, who hadn't even left the backfield yet. And you break that down very well on the screenshots. And guess what? The trap worked. Cooper was way, way in the clear for a touchdown, but Carr dumped it off to Murray. He's had three straight wins since that article was written. Are you seeing any improvement?
Yeah, I have seen. He has not done that as much, and that's, I appreciate you bringing that up, because that was the best and probably most glaring illustration of the kind of stuff we're talking about, that he's done a little bit too much. He has not done that as much the last few weeks, so it's been better. He wasn't – what he has done, though, that's kind of given a caveat to it, he's made a few bad decisions where that check down, that's kind of, I mean, it's a bad decision, but he's made a few erroneous decisions, and he's had a turnover in each game because of that. The Carolina game, he only had the one interception was his only negative play, the interception to Thomas Davis. The week before that in Mexico against Houston, he had more of those plays than you want to see. He was pretty uneven, but as far as reading the field, he has been better there. And that example that you brought up that was from that article, when a fan's watching that at home on TV, nine times out of 10, the announcer's probably going to say, and he gets to his check down, and that's the smart play, and hey, he's being patient. A lot of times those check downs, they're not always the smart play, and what will never be captured statistically are passes that should be thrown that are not thrown. And that's where the difference comes in with Carr. But to answer your question, he's been better about that the last month or so.
I'm telling you, Andy Benoit's work is phenomenal. If you're a football fan, it's something you shouldn't miss. For examples just like that and much, much more. You can also follow him, in addition to getting him at MMQB.com. You can follow him on Twitter, Andy_Benoit. We appreciate the time. I enjoy your work, Andy. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, thank you very much.
All right, take care. That's Andy Benoit. We got to get out of here. We're late for a break. Ken Rudolph, when we get back with today's news and notes as we wrap up the week on The Drive. Don't go away. No flipping. Sports 1140 KHDK. All right. No. Oh, I'm sorry. I cut him off. He wants an apology from Jeff Fisher and the powers that be with the Rams. I don't know. I started out this whole thing very solidly on Dickerson's side because Jeff Fisher's a wiener. I'm kind of starting to side with the Rams here.
This is getting ridiculous. Right? I demand an apology.
The more he talks, the crazier it is. Nate, it goes back to your thing, and it's so true. Once you become a member of the media, as a former player, you have to draw the line between asking for favors and then on the flip side, being able to openly criticize the organization as a whole.
Can we also throw in there as well that 98% of all professional athletes have been ridiculously coddled their entire life, have had people with their heads so far up their asses looking for something to kiss. They get everything for free, comped everywhere, let in to the front row or the club or where. It's just this mentality of a professional athlete that is so ridiculously entitled. And then when you move into media, which is, you know, quote unquote, the real world, you're an actual person and you don't get all those benefits and it rubs you the wrong way.
Here's a crazy idea. Pay for tickets.
Hi, how are you doing?
You can do that. Get yourself right down where you want to be.
And there are very few examples of people that have come overcome that entitled mentality being a professional athlete. And thank goodness one of us joins us each and every day. She's currently in Boston right now.
Wait, hold on. Used to be a professional athlete.
Yeah, come on. Geez, do you know what? You and Charles.
You know
Barkley.
What, Nate?
Wow.
Come on, hold on. Don't make this a gender thing.
Oh, that's what it was. Nate Goodyear just said he doesn't consider WNBA players professionals. Katie, I got your back. That's it. The Jim Rome Show is next. Lowdown noon to 3:00, and then of course Kings Celtics 3 p.m. pregame 4:30 tip off, followed by Puck Drop with the Sharks and Canadians in San Jose at 7:30 for Kevin Sherritz and Matt Jorns. For Katie Christensen and Nate Goodyear, I'm Carmichael Dave. Have a great weekend. Be safe, everybody. We'll see all of you at 6 a.m. on Monday. Enjoy the rest of your broadcast day on Sports 1140 KHTK.